Thank you for listening to this podcast from KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. We invite you to listen to more music and talk on our grassroots non-profit radio station in Laguna Beach, California, from anywhere in the world on kx935.com/listen or on our smartphone apps. But right now, here's that podcast from KX93.5. Beautiful music on KX93.5. That's it, I'm done for the day. Just want to go home now.
Yeah.
See the wife, stroke the dog.
That's what we do best.
It's beautiful music and it makes me happy.
Mm.
And I think that's an odd juxtaposition when you think, you know, people might say, oh, it's, you know, folk music is so miserable.
Yeah.
But there's clearly a beauty in the, you know, everybody wants to hear that whispered in their ear, I can hear your heart from here. It's everybody wants to hear that thing of, I'm listening to you, you know.
Yeah. It's both, though, isn't it? It can be miserable, too, and you can still feel joyful.
Still feel uplifted.
I didn't understand that when I was younger, but I felt it. You know, when I would listen to James Taylor, mm-hmm. to Joni Mitchell or something, I would understand that feeling of, you would feel joyful after it, but you might have been crying
right.
in the middle of it, you know.
Right.
But that's perfectly natural. Emotions aren't supposed to be this or that. Usually we're feeling a whole lot of different
things
stuff
at the same time,
you know.
Yeah. people talk about the voice in the head, don't they? And really, it's a committee. You know, it's never.
That's right.
It's not one voice.
There's about 18 people up there at any given point in time, and it, you know, sometimes they're screaming, sometimes they're whispering, but yeah, but they all have a place there.
But when music reaches you like that, it's almost like somebody said, "Okay, the meeting's over."
Yeah, I always like to think of it in a really nerdy, boring way, but I like to think of the music is one of the few things that can bypass the frontal lobe, which is our judgment center. It's the part that like censors everything and helps us make decisions. But music just goes like right to the brain, and you're not thinking about it. It's that experience of when you're listening to the radio, you're driving your car, and all of a sudden everything stops in your head, and you're like, "What is this? This is incredible." It may be a band you never heard or something. You know, I love that experience, and that's one of the main things we try to do whenever we're writing or performing. We want people to stop and to have that emotional experience.
Yeah, well, you've done it to me.
Thanks.
I was a little giddy before this. Now I'm all mellow and relaxed.
Yeah. We take it down a few notches here.
but you know. It's you mentioned Joni Mitchell and I played Nick Drake song before. He was the guy when I was a kid growing up that stopped me in my tracks. I was listening to Motorhead and Black Sabbath, and then all of a sudden, this guy comes along and just stopped me in my tracks.
Just as powerful, but about 50 decibels
quieter. Yeah.
But I had the same experience with Nick Drake too, and it it was a oh my gosh, how have I not been listening to this for my whole life, you know?
Yeah. Now, so you've got a psychological point of view because you are trained.
That's right.
As a mental health professional.
That's right.
So what kind of mental health professional were you or are you?
I did outpatient counseling for adults, usually general problems of living, depression and anxiety, things like that. I worked in a hospital for almost 5 years, and after about a week, I knew that was really, really not the right place for me. But for some reason, I stayed on for 4.5 years after.
Why was it not for you? Were you impatient? I would be impatient with the patients.
Well, yeah, that was a daily experience. I mean, there's a lot of reasons, not the least of which being that it's a terribly bureaucratic and frustrating system.
Absolutely.
You're working alongside peers who are trying to make a difference and actually help people. And most of the time, you're just kind of spinning a revolving door for everybody to walk in and out of. And the other side of it is that it was absolutely terrifying because it was a partially locked unit. And we had people that were dealing with very, very serious mental health issues, and they could be dangerous at times too. So, I'm not a fearful person, but when you count how many staff there are and how many patients there are, you do the math and you're like,
right,
if something goes wrong here, I'm not sure I can make it the 12 story drop out of this hospital building if I have to run.
Wow. Is there I'm just thinking as you're talking as well, the fear of the responsibility as well, because people, you've got, people are hurting,
right,
and it's not like you can give them a pill and say, okay, this is going to make you better. It may not. You have to do trial, and like you say, I had a psychiatric nurse girlfriend many years ago, girlfriend who was a psychiatric nurse,
bless
I should
her
say.
Heart.
Yeah, really. She quit and became a professor of Russian, actually.
Is that
interesting,
right?
Person.
Yeah.
But she would say that whatever you do, and the treatments change over time. New treatments come along, whatever, over time. And so she would say, whatever you do, a third get better, a third get worse, and a third stay the same. And it's not always the same third,
She's right.
Yeah.
She's absolutely right. Yeah, that's the nature of the beast. I mean, all the advancements we think we have in psychotherapy and counseling and everything, they say that basically everything does about as good as everything else.
Yeah.
Including not doing anything at all, which is which is overwhelmingly negative, and it doesn't always have to be like that. But on the broad scale, it's a difficult thing. I mean, it's a serious thing. It affects. I don't want to preach about it, but
no. But you've thought about it a lot, and you know, it also depends on what the zeitgeist is. For a while, they're taking a knife and chopping out a bit of the brain. Everyone's like, "Yeah, that's good." Then everyone's like, "Oh no, we mustn't do that. That's horrible and mean and horrible. So we don't do that." Now we give them some designer drug, or talking therapy, or behavioral therapy.
And we might look back in 50 years, and what we're doing today might seem archaic and outdated, you know. But it's to apply it to music, you know, this is the reason why I'm able to talk about it still passionately is because it's kind of the main thing that I like about making music is being able to offer people a little bit of a solace and a respite, you know. I mean, even, you know, with the election recently, it was neat for Abby and I and Adam, our other band member, to go on stage and realize, hey, this is cool. For 90 minutes, we get to allow people to escape from, like, the entire mess of, whatever side you're on. It's a very stressful and kind of rough time. So what a cool thing to be able to do. And in a way, that's therapeutic. It might not be therapy, and we might be charging more or less by the hour. I'm not sure. But but it's actually helpful. People can walk out and feel a little bit better than they did when they came in.
So I want to hear you play again. Really, this is a music show, but I'm so interested in this. First of all, you say that being of service to the people that you are playing, that's important to you.
Sure.
And that's, I mean, really, at the end of the day, when all the therapy's done and whatever it is, and you now I'm a useful member of society, that being useful will be the icing on the cake.
Right.
Psychologically, everybody knows that.
Right.
You know, once you start to give, you're good.
Yeah.
Right?
That's right.
You have to get to that place where you can.
That's right.
You've discovered that now. So is playing therapy for you? Is the actual playing a catharsis or something for you?
Yeah, sometimes it is. I mean, sometimes you're playing you've driven all night and you haven't slept and you play a festival at 10 a.m. or something and the sun is shining in your face and you just want to die. But so that's not like a super therapeutic moment for me, but
and that's a first world problem, frankly, you know.
Oh yeah. I don't get me wrong, I know that sounds incredibly that's,
you know, sometimes you're so tired and you get to your five-star hotel and
that was about the whitest thing. Let me see if I can say something whiter than that.
No, but I mean, obviously
I love mayonnaise.
Okay.
that's whiter.
Yeah.
No, it is a therapeutic thing. For me, performance is wonderful, but I do have to say that writing still remains for me, it's the most therapeutic thing. Do I get something when I look down and I see people that are like totally locked in to the song and you can tell they're affected by it? Yeah, that's super powerful, you know?
Yeah.
But as creative people, I think that we're always wanting to pull out that, you know, there's another seam in there that needs to be kind of ripped out, and we're always trying to get inside to do that. And that's when we feel most fulfilled, at least for me. That's the moment when I write that line that makes me feel something really deeply. In that moment, that is a very cathartic thing for me.
Brilliant to have that. As we were talking about before, people don't have the tools to deal, and we don't know whether doing something or not doing something will help them. Great to have that tool inside of you as a creative person.
Absolutely.
For dealing with that, you know, because saves you a lot of money in therapy.
It does.
For sure.
Yeah, you yeah. Know. I still have to, I still have to augment it with some real therapy every once in a while, too.
I have a mental health team, dude.
There you go. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Will you play for us again? Love to hear you again.
Yeah, absolutely.
I should say that William Fitzsimmons is here with Abby on fiddle and singing, and they are here to talk about music, and I just got distracted. But it's lovely to talk to you. So, once again, originally from Pennsylvania.
That's right. That's
and
right.
Now from Springfield, Illinois.
That's right.
William Fitzsimmons, live on KX93.5.
Can you hear me calling out your name? Know that I'm falling and I don't know what to say. Oh baby, better make a start. Better make it soon before you break my heart. Oh, I
Wow, I didn't expect that. That's great. That's great. Christine McVie, Fleetwood Mac song.
That's right.
Everywhere. So great. Wow. Wow.
We love the Mac.
Oh, come on. Who doesn't love the Mac?
Idiots.
Yeah, fools. the earliest memories I have of, you know, with... what was the guitarist's name? Very famous guitar player was in Fleetwood Mac and then left and went crazy. Peter Green.
Oh, Peter, before
McVie and
yeah.
I loved all that music.
Yeah,
I lived in Israel a long time ago when I was about 19, when that was a happening thing to do, and I looked after sheep for a while, and I was on my own on a hill, and the only album I had was that big record, Fleetwood Mac record, and it was on a cassette, and I had a little mini thing, and all I listened to for about 6 months was that one. You know.
That's remarkable. Do you still enjoy that record?
I haven't listened to it in a long time, but so I was,
no kidding.
I was like, wow.
Yeah, must revisit.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, tremendous stuff. Well, how did that come about, the cover? Because you're such a prolific songwriter.
People like familiarity, and I think whenever you're touring a new record, I always think it'd probably be a good idea to do a mix of it. You know, it does something. People's interest, their heart rate, you know, their sympathetic nervous system gets aroused whenever they hear something familiar, like their name or a song they've heard before. So, you know, the way we tend to play is usually pretty reserved. So it's nice when you take a song that does have some tempo and, you know, people, they recognize it immediately. They recognize the melody and
the lyric,
but they're like, what is that? They don't, you know. So it's just this thing that kind of, I feel like it brings people a little bit closer to us.
Do you know, that's an odd thing you should say that, because just thinking that, even though you're playing a cover song, which is not yours,
right.
You've been vulnerable and you've been singing about yourself and your life and characters that you've dreamed up for the whole show. And then you sing a song which isn't yours, and on an odd way, it connects you to the crowd in a way that's a little more sort of leveling. It's not like, you know, you're on a stage, you're above them in some way, psychologically as well as physically.
That's right.
But when you sing, when everybody sings, I want to be, I mean, everybody sing that along, you know, beautiful.
I love how you said that. It is leveling. Because I don't think there's any great benefit to me to exaggerate that height difference that you mentioned, the figurative and literal one. It's already there. Everybody knows it's there. But how neat is it when you even it out a little bit, and people, they feel like they're, I don't know if they feel like they're a part of the show.
No, but they feel connected to you, and you feel connected to them. And I know that feeling, and that's in the end, that's what you started playing guitar for,
that's
my
right.
friend.
That's exactly right.
To try and connect to people.
Well, specifically to 16-year-old girls.
Girls,
when I
yeah,
was a teenager.
Absolutely.
But now, yes.
But you won't do that now, not after last time and the parole and everything. And
no.
Breaks the terms of the parole, I would think.
The age is much different.
Yes.
And I also think my wife is probably rather that I just don't do that at all.
Yeah.
But that's
probably rather that. Have you asked her? I mean, don't. I wouldn't even go there. Because if you ask her, she'll tell you, and then you've got a whole new thing to do is just don't.
No, I shouldn't ask. Sweetheart, how do you feel about that?
But yeah, I think that's a major thing. I think a lot of people. It's funny when you watch young people start out in the music, when they start out playing music, and obviously it's to make that connection. Then they get into the biz side of it and they start making records, and their thoughts go toward other things, career, success, you know, doing the next big tour. Who can we tour with? Who do we like? Who do we not? And judgment all sets in,
right,
and all of that. And then there comes a point in most people's careers where they go to some festival and they see some guy playing a guitar, just enjoying himself, and he sounds horrible, but he looks so happy, and they go, I want to be like that.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Happened to me.
Yeah.
I remember the day. So, you know, and then you're back where you should be.
Right.
Because it becomes about the music again.
Yeah, it's important to revisit that guy, to remember that you were that and remember why you started doing it. I mean, I've been doing this for about 10 years now. Mm-hmm. And there's been peaks and valleys along the way. And if you're able to keep those things in mind, it's been beneficial for me to live in a pretty isolated spot, in the middle of the country and not really around a big city. It's nice. I go home and I'm not a superstar anyways when I'm in a city, but I mean, you remember how nice it is to sit down at a piano or a guitar
and just make that sound
and just, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. Well, man, it's been an absolute pleasure to meet you.
Pleasure's been ours.
And dead fun to hear you play. And I'm glad you're not a manic depressive.
No. I mean, the medicine's helping a lot.
And also to meet you, Abby, as well.
Me too.
Abby Gunderson's been here playing and singing along. And you know, we could talk all day. You're an interesting guy and there's a lot to know. So I would suggest to the listener to, when you've got a minute and you're not driving, Google William Fitzsimmons and find out more about this gentleman, because he's not just a pretty face.
Yeah, and... Well, not an ugly face. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Not an ugly face.
Between.
That's what the press is saying about you.
Yeah.
William Fitzsimmons, not ugly.
Not ugly? Question mark?
Right.
Yeah.
They want you to make up your mind for yourselves.
Yeah. And I think that's the best that our team is going to be able to do. Yeah.
Good for you. Before you go, we should talk about gigs and where we can find more about what you're doing.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. WilliamFitzsimmons.com is my website. There's tour dates on there. And we'll be in, San Diego actually tomorrow and then Phoenix, the day after.
Brilliant.
So we're rolling on.
All right, well, enjoy. I know you're touring, but I didn't mention it much because I'm like, you seem like you're very happy. You don't, there's nothing really.
Yeah.
You know, you're on a bus, you go to the next thing. And
no, I'm doing okay.
Off we go.
I get to tour with people that are actually wonderful and they're friends, and I have two kids at home and a wife. I'm good.
Yeah.
You know,
good
lucky
for you,
guy.
Man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great to meet you.
Thanks a lot.
Please come back and see us next time you're on your way by. All right, it's KX 93.5, live music in the studio. It does not get better than that.